Let's go from the teeth, not just to the whole body, but to our networks and friends. Enrico Coera is Director of the Centre for Health Informatics at the Australian Institute for Health Innovation at the University of New South Wales. Enrico is looking closely at a fascinating phenomenon that is increasingly becoming known as social contagion.
That's right. For a long time, we've known that infectious diseases can spread from contact. So social networks will mediate the spread of flu or whatever. What's interesting is that we've only realized in the last few years that all the great non-communicable diseases, obesity, heart disease, are actually socially transmitted along those very same networks. There was a very famous study, which you're probably familiar with, is the Framingham Heart Study.
So this is where they've been following several thousand people for over 50 years.
It started in 1948.
The town of Framingham in Massachusetts.
That's right. And they reanalyzed the data because some bright spark realized that it asked everybody who their best friends were in the study. So they constructed networks to see who spoke to who. And they started to look at smoking. And they discovered, as you would expect in the 50s and 60s, everybody smoked. And then when he looked in later years, the smokers were thin, but they were all clustered in little friendship networks. And they analysed the networks then for the spread of obesity.
It has to be said that some of these were people who no longer lived in Framingham.
That's right.
But they still maintained some of their networks.
That's right. Or that their networks might have changed, they've added new people in. And the question is it birds of a feather flocking together, or are people becoming like each other? And controlling for that birds of a feather flocking together thing, it seems that obesity literally transmitted down the network.
Out to about 6 degrees of separation, wasn't it?
It's exactly the same idea.
So somebody you might actually not know in your network, but you were influenced by somebody you would have rarely met.
That person you don't know influences the person who directly influences you.
So when your network's putting on weight, you put on weight, and when your network decides they've had enough of this and they're going to lose it, you lose it.
Sadly, it's more likely that you put on than you'll take off, but it does work both ways.
So it's easier to acquire a social disease than it is to get rid of it.
Sadly, yeah.
And what you're trying to do is, can you use social networking technology to fight these social diseases?
That's right. It's intriguing, isn't it? So we have this idea all of a sudden that many of these major diseases are socially transmitted at the very time we've developed a new technology called social media.
And is there any evidence that you become fat through Facebook?
No. So we are at the very earliest stages of understanding how social networks change health behaviour. Lots of small studies showing that we can influence behaviour through the social networks. There has been one mega randomised trial, but not in healthcare. So 65 million people were enrolled in a trial.
Sounds like a big sample.
Very big. So this was the Obama election. Half the arm got a message personally, and half the arm got a message on Facebook. And for those who got a how to vote message on Facebook, their friends who saw that message were more inclined to vote than otherwise. So the social side is far more effective in changing behaviour. So that was a huge study. We've in healthcare have actually been very good at exploiting social networks, not online, but in the real world, offline networks. Just think of Alcoholics Anonymous. What you do there is you're artificially constructing a new network of peers with different behaviours and different norms, and that makes a big difference. So we've actually used social network therapy, albeit offline, in alcohol, in substance abuse, all sorts of places.
Without the technology.
Without the technology. So the big question now is, can we replicate what happens offline, online? And there's enough early evidence to say it really is a compelling story.
Give me some examples.
A very good example might be that I want to change the behaviour of a group. How might you do that? You might find a buddy who you would add into their network who would exemplify the behaviours you would want. So if you want somebody to exercise more, here's a health buddy, for example.
So you're trying to induce a network.
So network induction is a slightly different idea. That's the fact that I've got an existing network, but it's not doing very much. And can I get it to start to transmit messages or snowball messages around? So,
what marketers are trying to do through viral marketing.
So that's been used in HIV messaging, for example, where people have taken existing social networks and tried to use those networks to promulgate safe sex messages, for example. And that certainly works.
So there's been randomized trials in that?
Small trials, yeah.
Some of the technologies I've heard being used are not necessarily what you'd call social networking. So, for example, they use geolocation to find out where you are. And if you're about to go into a hamburger store, they say, whoops, no, perhaps not, or reminding you about certain behaviours and jogging your arm. But that's not really social networking. That's the electronic monkey on your back.
The little demon. The idea with this is that rather than targeting the individual, we target the network around the individual. Most of medicine is all about direct targeting of how people behave and trying to shape their personal behaviours. What we're saying is, let's try and influence the milieu around you to get the same result.
Can it be done in mental health? I mean, we are world leaders in online interventions to help depression and anxiety. That's again one-to-one. But what about the group and group therapy?
For that to be true, then we would have to have evidence that depression is socially shifted. And in fact, the Framingham data showed that depression is transmitted, in quotes, along social networks. So there's strong evidence that there's a social component to that. So the answer is there is prima facie evidence to suspect that if we intervened at the group level, we would also get some outcomes. But I don't think at the moment anyone's looked at that.
And the use of the crowd. You've got crowdsourcing in astronomy, people identifying funny objects in the sky. What's happening in healthcare when it comes to crowdsourcing, using the wisdom of the crowd?
So this is really interesting. Up until now, data has always come from the health service organisations. And what crowdsourcing is going to let us do is tap into the biggest source of information out there, which is the patient and the consumer. There was a fascinating study just a couple of months ago which looked at how well people rated the quality and safety of hospitals in the UK. And people's crowdsourced ratings, in other words, the belief of the population, directly matched the traditional metrics of the quality of the organisation. So a completely unused but high-quality signal there.
Which verified what they already thought, but at least it verified it.
But it's a different channel, and also it means that other things that might be detected by that crowd are also important.
But the crowds are also already driving randomised trials in rare diseases by doing their own recruitment.
Exactly. So the crowd is a source of many things. It's a source of information, but it's also a way of detecting people who can help you. So can I find other people like me to share information with and maybe to help each other? Can I crowdsource a large randomized trial because I'm having trouble recruiting? So we can get all sorts of things from the community.
To what extent are healthcare professionals, clinicians, involved in social media? I mean, we've got the situation where we're still not doing the right thing in healthcare. You're associated with work which shows that only just over half of people who come in contact with the healthcare system for a wide range of conditions get appropriate care. For some, it's like antibiotic prescribing is done at 19%. 8% of people who have a certain form of heart attack, where you don't have an abnormal ECG, get full-blown evidence-based care. 17% of people who do have an ECG with heart. You know, doctors and nurses are not doing the right thing. And it's not just Australia, it's across the world. Are social media a tool here for getting people to do the right thing?
I think that's actually a very important question. If we look at where the behaviours of doctors come from, when we study, for example, patterns of referral from, say, GP to specialist, you tend to refer to the same people and you refer to people who are part of the social network you're in. Evidence-based practice is shaped by networks of people we contact. So the social shapes our beliefs.
So errors propagate through networks.
Well, they do, but so do practices. So we know that one of the biggest sources of encouragement to do a certain thing or to practice a certain way comes from your peers. So people tend to practice like their peers. So if we can shape the way the peer group works, shape the sorts of things that people do that make sure that they are evidence-based, that's a real opportunity. The question behind all of this then is, what is the right way of doing that? Which technology do we need? So people immediately are thinking of Twitter or Facebook when we talk about social media, but for healthcare, they probably aren't the vehicles we're talking about. So as you said, social media can be anything in which we interact online where the social group is present. And I think in healthcare, there are lots of special requirements around privacy, consent, for example, where we just wouldn't do it using one of these mainstream technologies. For example, the idea of putting a buddy in to change my network is a great idea, but that probably needs to be done with consent. I don't want to have my social group manipulated without me realizing it.
So where to from here with all this work?
I think the next 12 months is going to be very interesting. I'm aware of quite a number.
A shorter time frame is that?
Yeah, I'm aware of quite a number of studies which are coming out now looking at exactly this question of social media and social diseases. Can we change behaviours and improve clinical outcomes? We will see larger studies reporting. And I think the moment that happens, the penny will drop that this is a new way of doing business and that network-based therapy as opposed to person-based therapy is not just something that we might do in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but is something we can use to tackle probably the biggest source of the burden of disease we've got, sort of obesity, all these lifestyle challenges that we have. We're on the cusp of probably a big change in dealing with some of these very intractable health conditions.
What are the risks?
The risks are that there are always unanticipated consequences. It might be that by exposing people to a new social network, there are things that will happen that you don't want to happen.
Because you lose control. It becomes, it takes it on its own life.
Of course you do. We did a study a few years ago trying to see whether people's health beliefs could be changed by the crowd. And we found that indeed, if you saw what other people thought, you changed your belief. But what we found was that those people who were not confident were 6 times more likely to be influenced by the crowd and change their beliefs. So what that study showed was the people who are most vulnerable are also those who are most likely to be influenced. And if you look at the web, you can find anything. If you want to find pro-anorexia groups on YouTube, you can find that.
So there are not enormous ethical issues if you're going to intervene in a public health sense.
Absolutely. And I think that's why I can't imagine that a Twitter or a Facebook is going to be the vehicle for change, that we're going to be inspired by them, but we'll have to build very health-centered systems to do what we're talking about.
Enrico Coera is Professor of Health Informatics at the University of New South Wales.